I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, are you mother...
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Arch Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
My name is Bart. Welcome to Bart Cop Radio Show number 60. Seen on BartCop.com, heard on the Bart Cop Radio Networks. Oh, got a big, big show for you today. I am flying solo today due to time constraints and the upcoming holiday, which is tomorrow. We're having to do the show without the famous Tommy Mac, so it's all on me. You put the blame on me. I put the finger on myself. So, lot to do. Let's get started. What do we do? Oh, yeah, a shot of Chinaco. Oh, that's good. Also, and I'll explain later, we can do a shot of Casa Doy Reposado. Just chase it. Fine stuff. I'll explain that later. But right now, got a big, big show to get into. No time to delay. Here we go. Start off a little. Randy Rhodes. Randy Rhodes is going to explain in just a couple of minutes. I don't know how she does it. She's a fast talker, and she somehow cuts through all the crap and cuts out all the unnecessary paragraphs. She's going to give it to you straight and hard, which is how you like it. She's going to explain why the BFEE is responsible for 9/11, for terrorism, for the Gulf War, for the Iraq War, for all the problems we have outside of the Israel-Palestinian problem. It all dates back to George Bush and April Glaspie in 1990. Listen how simple she makes this sound. Go, Randy.
Condoleezza Rice is going to be the face of diplomacy, a woman who apparently never had an opinion of her own, who only gave the president the crazy, crazy, crazy view of the world. You know, the one that he wanted. Not the one he needed, the one he wanted. Can we do Iraq? Yes, yes, sir, we can. She called him my husband. Remember, she was like talking about Bush, and she referred to him as her husband. So he's the husbandant is what he is, and they're married. I don't know. But this is just, I guess she's dedicated herself to forgetting the same amount of names of as many European countries as the president has. And we're in good hands now. Nothing will matter with her. Nothing. Whatever the president wants, she'll take the message. She's like, there was this woman named April Glaspie, who actually was in charge of Bush 1's messages to Saddam Hussein. And Glaspie was an ambassador, you know, and she went to Iraq, and she was, you know, very friendly with Saddam, because we were very friendly with Saddam. During the whole 9 years of the Iraq-Iran war, we picked both sides, and we helped both sides. Hence, Iran-Contra. We gave Iran TOW missiles and chemical weapons and all kinds of crap. And we took the money, laundered it through our friends, the Saudis, and then we funded illegal operations in all of Central America, where we created mass graves in the name of fighting a communist dictator that we actually installed, Somoza. So, you know, it's a crazy circle of violence that they love because it's profitable. So when Congress said no, they couldn't have their secret war, they said, well, then we'll have to fund it ourselves, and that's why we had Iran-Contra. It was illegal. Oliver North was convicted. He was the money launderer. And he was overturned on appeal because they used immunized testimony, meaning what he told them was the truth, but he told them the truth under immunity. And you can't do that and have the appeals court say anything except, but he told you the truth because you told him he wouldn't be prosecuted. Then you prosecuted him based on the truth. So when they overturned his appeal on his conviction appeal, when they overturned his conviction on appeal, they said to him, this in no way relieves you of your factual guilt. So we know that they did do it. It's just that we can't use the truth against you because we gave you immunity. And that's the cold hard fact about Oliver North, who now presents himself on TV as some sort of a war hero. It's gross. It's disgusting. And that people would listen to him on matters of whether or not it's okay to shoot a guy in, you know, who's dying in the mosque, you know, it's just, to me, it's beyond the pale that you would even ask this guy anything about rules of war. He circumvented every single solitary rule of war that Congress voted on. It was called the Boland Amendment. And it said, no, you can't go to war in Central America. No. We got this crazy place here called the School of the Americas. We teach people how to be dictators. We train Manuel Noriega. We train more of these dictators by 9 a.m. than most countries do all day. And that's saying something. Trust me, that's saying something. So our foreign policy has been one of brutality and, you know, and then we moved into the 90s, which was the humanitarian era. That was an era in which when we spotted ethnic cleansing or when we could, you know, do counterterrorism work, when we figured out that as a result of winning the Gulf War I, we won a base in Saudi Arabia, the Prince bin Sultan Air Base, and we sent tons of Americans there, and that's what made Osama bin Laden go crazy. He did not want an American military outfit. He didn't want a base. He didn't want a footprint of America and its military, which was only there to protect the Saudi royal family, who are some of the most corrupt rulers on the planet. 30% unemployment in Saudi Arabia, one of the richest places on earth. And why did we defend Kuwait in the first place? Are they a democracy? Do they have elections now? We freed them, right? We liberated Kuwait. Kuwait is one of the most oil-rich, tiny little countries. They had the means to protect themselves. Why did we do it? Because we wanted to, well, we lied to the Saudis. We told the Saudis. We presented them with aerial photographs, too. And we said, look, there's Iraqi troops massing on your border. Scare the crap out of them. Enough to let them open up their holy land to us. It created a monster named Osama bin Laden, who we very rarely talk about anymore. And that's how we got where we are today.
It's amazing how she can do that. But like all of us, Randy has her imperfections. You know I love Randy. You know I think she's the best there is. She's the best guy on our team, and that probably includes Clinton. I've never heard anyone who could just grab the truth, put it in a box, and fire it at you, as well as Randy Rhodes. But she and I disagreed quite a bit, not together or personally, on the Kerry situation. I felt Kerry lost the election sometime in August. Matter of fact, sometime in September. Remember, I was having a lot of trouble then when I said, Kerry, you better do something. You're an idiot. You're losing this. You're blowing it. You're not even trying. What the hell's wrong with you? You're ineffectual. You're not doing anything. You know, you're mealy mouth, marble mouth. You're not doing. And then I got a wave of cancellations. Bart, we can hear that from Rush. Why do we want to hear that from you? So I had to ease back on the criticism of Kerry, but I knew he had it lost way ahead. Middle of September, I titled the issue Kerry in a Landslide, not necessarily as a joke, but just to mark, you know, my acceptance that you didn't want to hear the truth. Meanwhile, the whole time Randy was pounding away, Kerry in a landslide. Kerry can't lose. Kerry's going to win so big. He's laying the trap. He's a prosecutor with experience. He knows what he's doing. And I thought that was a big, big mistake, because if Kerry failed to win, which he did, then Randy was going to have to answer. How do you, after guaranteeing, see, I had to avoid that, because if I guaranteed Kerry was going to win, you wouldn't believe what my mailbox was going to look like on that Wednesday afterwards. Bart, how could you? You lied to us. You told us it was a guarantee in the bag, Bart. Look what you did to us. How dare you? We trusted you. We in the whole riff, and I just wasn't going to go there because I knew Kerry had the thing lost way the hell long. I mean, sure, the debates gave me a little bit of hope, but bottom line, yeah, we don't need to go through that again. But Randy guaranteed Kerry in a landslide. So when Kerry lost, it's my opinion, Randy had no choice but to go full tilt with the Diebold problem. Now, did we get screwed out of the election? We don't know. Probably, but we have no evidence. We have no way to fix it because the Democrats do not insist on a paper trail. The Democrats said any way the Republicans want to set up the election is fine with us. That's why we don't know. And if you want, call me a traitor because I'm not 100% on the Diebold bandwagon. But there's, I need some evidence to jump on a bandwagon. I can't just jump on it because it's trendy. If somebody can prove it, and they can't prove it, because the Democrats didn't bother to insist on proof. The Democrats told the Republicans, any way you want to set up the election is fine with us. If you don't want a paper trail, you know, when you buy a loaf of bread at the Get and Go, they give you a receipt. But when you vote for the leader of the planet, you don't get a receipt because the Democrats said it's okay, we can live with that system. And they're not living with it, they're dying with it, because they're stupid. They don't know how to construct an argument. They don't know how to make a deal with somebody. It's like all the people that know how to make a deal are Republicans, and there's only a handful of Democrats that know how to argue. So anyway, we're in this position now. And because Randy guaranteed a landslide for Kerry, now she's stuck. In my opinion, Randy, don't get mad, but I think she's stuck now. She's wedded to this Diebold problem. That puts her in bed with Bev Harris, and that is disturbing. I think Bev Harris is the wrong person to lead this charge, because Bev Harris keeps telling you that the proof is just right around the corner. We're on the very, very edge of the truth here. If we just had another $1,000 or $2, we'd give you the big job. And it's 2 years we've been waiting for Bev's truth to come out. And so when this election went the wrong way, that empowered Bev. Now she's become, you know, a big player on the big stage. Call it jealousy if you want, but I'm afraid Bev is promising that which she can't deliver. And you remember how Hatfield was an inoculation for Bush against the cocaine charges. Because if the messenger is faulty, then the message is also faulty. So the Bush cocaine story went to hell forever. When it turned out that Hatfield, the guy who brought the story up, was a crook or tried to kill his boss or something like that. And then when Dan Rather, the idiot fool, bungled the entire AWOL story, well, that was Bush's inoculation for that now. Anytime from now on till the end of time, anything comes up about the AWOL story, it's, oh, we remember the Dan Rather business? That all was discredited, which it wasn't. But because Dan Rather was flawed, the message was flawed. Now, here we come with Bev Harris. If Bev Harris leads the banner, and right now she's the only one, as far as, you know, you pick up a newspaper, if you see anything about the election, you're going to see black box voting and a quote from Bev. So she's leading this cause, and I think she is the wrong person to do it. The analogy I used at the time was that when you promise, she kept saying that, I don't know if she used the word guarantee, but she said she had the proof that would bring Bush down. And I told her if she had the proof that would bring Bush down, I would fly to wherever she was in America and crawl across the room on my hands and knees and kiss her feet. And I haven't had to do any flying or any crawling or any kissing because she hasn't delivered. I don't think she can deliver. And if we could, I wish we could have this message in someone else's hands besides Bev. But with Randy behind her, Randy's one of the biggest voices the Democrats have. And when she puts herself in bed with Bev, I think that's trouble. I don't get to hear as much of Randy as I'd like, but the few times I have heard her, she said, hey, please send Bev some money. Bev needs some money. America needs this to happen. If you like democracy, you need to send Bev some money. And I think there's just a little problem with that. Go ahead. Call me jealous. Yeah, sure. It'd be great if Randy Rose was on the air every day mentioning, be sure and send Bartkop a few dollars. Yeah, that'd be great. But that's not what this is about. This is about, like the cocaine, like the AWOL, we're going to lose this entire Diebold story if the messenger is flawed. And since I, Bart, am flawed, you don't see me leading any crusades there because they just take one look at my past and they'll say, oh, that guy. But, yes, that's the situation we're in now because Randy went a little overboard with her guarantee. Now she's stuck with the Bev thing. I think that's bad. I wish there was a way out of it. If you know a way out of it, I mean, it all gets down to Kerry. If Kerry doesn't mind that he lost the election fraudulently, then really nobody else can raise this. If Kerry was to stand there and say, I think I won Ohio, I demand to see a recount, then some newspapers and some networks might say, well, yeah, he's got a right to say that. But if Randy and Bart and Bev and Mike Malloy and Air America Radio get together and say we need a recount, they're going to say, oh, those liberals and their fancy, muddy, fuzzy math. You know, we're just not going to go anywhere. Kerry doesn't mind losing. And I get these letters saying, Bart, you knew that Kerry was a plant the whole time. He was a Skull and Bones buddy, which I never was happy with, but, you know, he was Bush's good buddy with the Skull and Bones, and he got in there just so he could take a dive, and, you know, I don't really believe that, but it's so hard to explain, or it's so hard to believe how he could take that bad a dive if it wasn't intentional. I mean, when you choose to windsurf instead of campaigning, it just makes you wonder, dude, you know, we got a house to paint. And instead of going up and down with a paintbrush in your hand, you know, you're out riding your bicycle. Now, that's not getting the house painted. And then when the house didn't get painted at the time and nobody got paid, we kind of are going to look to the guy that was playing on his bicycle while we were trying to paint the house before the deadline. Dumb analogy, I know, but something has to explain Kerry's lack of, not only did he not want to campaign for the presidency, now that he's lost it, he doesn't care. He doesn't care how, he doesn't demand an investigation. He doesn't demand a recount or even a count. Oh, and what got me started on this, I saw a headline in a paper that said, hold on. What got me started on this, I saw a headline in the paper, Long Lines on Election Day Enhance the Appeal of Early Voting. Well, number one, the only long lines are in black parts of town, in other words, Democrats. If there's 50,000 white voters in a rich part of town, they have plenty of machines. So, because Whitey, he can't afford to stand there and wait, because he's too important. But them darkies, they got nothing else to do. Their souls are already lost. They might as well stand in line for 12 hours trying to vote. So we'll just put a couple of machines in the dark part of town, because we don't care. Since that's the case, they're telling people to vote early. But isn't it true that in Ohio, the early votes were never counted? They don't start opening votes, the way I understand it, until Election Day. And if they had a couple of 100,000 early votes, no one even counted those. They counted the day's votes and declared Bush the winner. And Kerry said, oh, okay, I concede, bye. And he ran out the door. So voting early is just another, isn't that just a way to get your vote not counted? Because it's like I heard Randy Rhodes say, one reason we need to recount Ohio is because the absentee ballots, is that what they're called? Yeah, the absentee ballots were not counted. The military votes were not counted. The people who are overseas, apparently that's a different category, their votes weren't counted. The people who voted early, their votes weren't counted. There was like six or seven groups of voters whose votes were never counted. They only counted that day's electronic vote, declared Bush the winner. Kerry said, that's fine with me, and now we got the mess we're in. So somehow, in closing, well, we get a lot of waves, don't we? We need to get a valid count, but we're going to either Hillary or Bill or Gore or Kerry is going to have to stand up and demand it. A guy like Dean, he's got no reason. I like Dean, but he's got no reason to lead this charge. Bev Harris is certainly not going to get the country behind her. You know, it's going to take one of those four. And of the four, I guess Hillary's the only one eligible to move forward. But yes, we're not going to win any more elections until we get a legal and fair way to trace the accounting as we go. And until someone demands that, until someone of substance demands that, we're going to continue to lose elections. And it all gets back to the Democrats don't want to win. I wish someone could explain that to me. Okay, going to try to do this in one take because of behind and there ain't no time to go back and fix nothing. I got an editorial here in the local newspaper in Tulsa. It's called the Tulsa Urban, and it's kind of one of those little magazines that says what new restaurants are opening and that kind of what bands are playing. But like everyone in the world, they've turned ultra-right wing, and this guy, Paul Kegnor, Ph.D., he must have a Ph.D. in monkeyism, has written an editorial called Carrying... That's with a K-E-R-R-Y, carrying the atheist vote. When you point fingers at values voters, and who did that? Nobody. Be careful what you ask for. While liberals complain about the religious vote that went for W, now, I haven't heard a liberal complain about that. I've heard them comment on it. They refuse to discuss, perhaps happily accept, the non-religious vote that went for John F. Kerry. Now, immediately, this guy, out of his ass, pulls up a bunch of conjecture and labels it as fact, which ought to be considered a greater liability for an American president to receive the overwhelming support of devout Protestants and Catholics or to be backed by atheists. Which speaks worse? Don't we have this backward? Well, no, sir, we don't have it backward. You've got it backward. We don't need a government run by religion. That's what the founding fathers fled. They wanted to get away from a state religion. That's why America was built. You idiot. If the religious people could just understand that it's a good idea for them to have the government and the religion separated. Why do you want the religion and the tanks to be put together? We don't want the tanks and the guns and the bombs to enforce a religion. What is wrong with them? It just seems so logical. Let's keep the guns and the bombs away from the religion. That makes all the sense in the world. You want freedom to be religious. You don't want the government to put a gun to your throat and say, this is what you believe in. Got it? They just don't seem to get that point. We've heard plenty about President Bush's huge advantage in the 2004 election from evangelicals, and less so about the extremely significant fact that Catholics who attend Mass weekly voted for Bush 55-44, which is startling religious rejection of John Kerry, a Catholic. Well, yes, it was possibly a mistake to run a Catholic, because Catholics are crazy. And even the people who go to church every week believe in taking the pill. Some of them believe in the death penalty. Some of them believe in abortion. I'll bet priests and nuns, you can't convince them to go down the line on this Catholic dogma. I'll bet you just cannot do it. I'll bet they say they do, but when comes time to help their parents in their final days, I'll bet they're a little eager with the morphine. I'll bet when they're little sister gets pregnant when she's 12, 13 years old, I'll bet they kind of turn their back and say God wouldn't understand an abortion in this case. I'll bet there's 1,000 of those. Yet the one aspect of the November 2 vote that is being completely ignored is behavior not of the most devout, but the least devout. According to CNN exit poll data, which we cannot go by, CNN's exit poll data said Kerry won. Now here we go again. They're wanting to cherry pick the data, just like Bush did with the CIA information with Iraq. Items number 1 and 2, I believe. 3 and 4, no, I don't believe that. 5 and 6, I'll take, but 7 and 8 are bad and wrong. And then they run over here and say, my data says 1 and 2 and 4 and 5 are great. Well, no, that's not how it works. You either believe the data or you don't. You don't get the, just like with the Catholics. The Catholics want to take the, you know, every Catholic Mass, I forget what it's called, but yes, it's the profession of faith, whatever that prayer is called. Every Mass, you stand up and say, I believe in the Trinity. I believe in the virgin birth. I believe in no babies outside of wedlock. They give you this whole list of what they believe in. And then these people leave church and go break those very commandments they swore to. What is wrong with Catholics? If you're a Catholic, then be a Catholic. But don't sit there like it's a smorgasbord and say, oh, I'm going to skip these dishes. You don't get to do that. If you're a Catholic, you buy the whole thing or you have the brains to get out and say, I reject that because it makes no sense. All right, according to CNN, those who attend church more than weekly made up, oh, this is just a whole bunch of numbers that make, I'll give you an example. Those who attend church more than weekly made up 16% of the voters, or 18 million. And they went for Bush by 63% to 35%, or 11 million to 6 million, a difference of 5 million votes. However, those who never attended church, which equal 50% of the voters, or 17 million voters, went for Kerry by 64%, or 11 million voters, which is a difference of 5 million voters. Now, you just drown us in numbers, you idiot. I'm as good as anybody I know with numbers, but you throw 15 numbers at a guy in one paragraph, and anybody's going to get lost. This was much like the 2000 vote, when those who attended church, we don't care. It's the same gobbledygook for 2000 instead of 2004. In other words, religious voters who won the day for Bush this year were countered by non-religious Americans who tried to win the day. They're saying that Kerry can't attract a religious person and that Bush can't attract a agnostic, which is goofy crazy. Again, you're relying on this flawed data that showed Kerry won the election. If the exit polls say that Kerry won the election and he lost by a significant amount, you say, then that means all these facts, unquote, that you're trying to give us are all flawed by a significant amount. I don't see how they can cherry pick that. So atheists were most prominent in the two bluest states, Hollywood and Manhattan, made their presence known. Well, you know, it just could be that California and New York are a little less faith-based. You know, to be a person of faith, you believe in that which cannot be proved. You close your eyes to the facts, and you look at the cloud and say, I trust the judgment of the cloud being more than I do the scientist. That is a form of insanity. Of course you're going to get a higher degree of sanity on the East and West Coast in New York and L.A. than you are in Idaho and Mississippi. That's pretty much a fact. The idea that we should let, you know, the rest of the world is looking at America and say, why do they let people from Mississippi and Idaho run the country? That's confusing to me. Why do they let some idiot cowboy from Texas with horse shit on his boots? You know, A, you can't trust anybody that wears boots and a cowboy hat. My God, what is wrong with this country? The world looks at us and they think J.R. Ewing is running America, and they may be right. Some idiotic Texas oil man who doesn't know anything but a little bit of oil, and Bush doesn't even know that. He just gets appointed to these companies as head because his daddy was president, and then he turned out to be president. Go figure. How in the hell did Bush become president over the hundreds of qualified Republicans? Remember, it all gets back to the oil in 2000. They had to have that oil vote, or Al Gore was going to turn America into the wind, into the solar, into the batteries, into everything else but the oil. But the Republicans and the oil people, they kept us in the Middle East so they could keep with their wars, so they could have more tanks, more bombs, the Star Wars missile shield. They can have all this bullshit. That's why gasoline is $50 a barrel instead of $25, because this was manipulated. It was written down. It was scripted. They're following the game plan. That's why gas is $3 a gallon instead of $1.50 or wherever, depending on where you live. But the gas that was $22, $23 a barrel when Bush was elected, that same gas is $52 now. What is wrong with you people, that not you listeners, most of you, but what is wrong with the voters who voted for $52 oil instead of $22 oil? Where is your pocketbook? Why do you think you have that money to throw away? Bush is a good guy. He's a cowboy. He says he likes God, so I think I want to pay $80 to fill up my tank instead of $40. That's crazy. What? Yes, these are the people who aren't in Manhattan and aren't in L.A. They want to pay $80 to fill up their SUV instead of $40. And you're wondering what's wrong with us? I don't buy it. It has been noted that 22% of the electorate said that moral values was their most important issue, 79% of which went for Bush. Now, how do you explain that? The murdering monkey, the man who giggles when he kills, the man who doesn't go to church as often as Kerry, the man who's murdered 100,000 civilians and over 1,000 soldiers and let 3,000 people die so he could gin up this war so gas could go from $22 to $50 a barrel, he's the moral guy. How in the hell is that possible? If you go back to Tuesday's page, Clinton allowed a blowjob to happen on his watch, and he was a bad president. President Bush allowed 9/11 to happen on his watch, and then he fabricated a war that's killed another 1,000 people, and he's a good president. What's wrong with us that we don't see that? That's what they keep trying to tell us. They're not satisfied with victory. They want to stand over the vanquished and explain to them why it was they lost with a bunch of phony reasons. It just kills me. This moral values for Bush thing, this should not suggest that other side stayed home. Consider the abortion issue. 15% of those who voted believe that abortion should never be legal. Another 15% said it should always be legal. Ah, but the 15% on your side, the Bob Barrs, they will get an abortion if it's in their interest. If they can save a little money or save a little convenience, they'll have the abortion all the time while condemning the other guy for having one. That is the hypocrisy of the Republicans on this issue. They don't want people to be left alone to make their individual decisions. They don't want people to be empowered. They want the government to make decisions for the women because women are inherently stupid. That thing between their legs makes them stupid. That's what the Republicans are telling us. You cannot make a decision if you're a woman. You've got to look to your man, like the Bible says. If you want to know what to do, you got to ask people like Jim Inhofe and Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond, what do I do with my pregnancy, oh master? 2004 exit poll data that says Kerry won point to a statistically accurate profile. Next to African Americans, the surest Democratic voter is the unmarried, city-dwelling, Northeast, pro-choice atheist with a graduate degree who thinks that gay people should be legally married. You lying bastard. Who in the world said that gay people should be legally married? Now look at the word. This is a doctor, a PhD behind his name, Paul Kengor, K-E-N-G-O-R. He's got a PhD, and he's telling us that we believe gay people should be married. No. What we believe is if two men or two women want to be married, it's not our business. The biggest crime about this whole election and this values issue, if it even exists, is that we want people to be gay, that the gay people want your children to be gay. They've got nothing to gain by that. If two 40-year-old men want to live together, why do they care if some fourth grader is gay or not? That's not in their interest. But if you've got a fourth grader who feels like he's gay and doesn't know what to do, and he's bouncing off the walls and he can't understand why the world is different, or raise it up a few years. You got a kid 13, 14. All his classmates are into girls, and he can't figure out why he's different. Now, sure, that guy needs a little help. It would be nice if he had a place to go where he could talk to somebody who wouldn't take him out and drown him or tie him to a stake or tie him to a fence in Wyoming if he's got some confusion about his sexuality. That's all the gay people want. They want people who are in trouble to get a little help. They're not trying to force anything on anybody. These religious sons of bitches, and I'm not mad at religion people, I'm mad at the sons of bitches who use religion to distort the truth and make it a lie. Check this out. Next to African Americans, the surest Democratic voters are unmarried, city-dwelling. Well, yeah, most of us, the smarter people live in the cities, true. Northeast, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, when you lose a state 53-48, that doesn't mean that all the people in that state, that doesn't mean that the 48 live in the Northeast. The least likely Democratic voter is a married mom or dad who regularly attends church. No, they say they regularly attend church on the form when asked. Please. To hear them tell the tale, America is dead on Sunday morning. You can't find anybody anywhere like the old Batman movie promos. Where are all the people? They're in church. No, they're not. Who goes to church? 20% of the people? To hear them tell it, it's 95%. And only that handful of atheists is waiting outside. Liberals will maintain that Karl Rove revved up the religious vote for Bush. What they don't want to realize is that they drove religious voters to Bush. How do you drive religious people towards a murdering monkey, a man who giggles when he kills? Among the reasons were the relentless attacks on Bush's faith. Wow, can anyone name an attack on Bush's faith? I don't think I've ever heard one. An attack on Bush's faith. I think Bush using faith to fool the stupid people, I've seen that attacked. But nobody's attacked Bush's faith. America recognizes that Bush is not unusually religious speaking, either by contemporary or historical standards. When Frank Rich and Maureen Dowd hammer Bush unceasingly on his faith, no, they have never done that. Not even Maureen Dowd. They merely preach to the choir and unwittingly inform devout people of who is not on their side and why they shouldn't bother with the New York Times. Aha, the evil New York Times again. The Democratic Party is paying a price by kowtowing to the liberal wing's fear of faith, embrace of moral relativism, and support of abortion on demand. That is crazy. If Democrats don't like the situation, they should change it. For starters, liberals should stop blasting Bush each time he mentions God. If Bush was halfway sincere, nobody would mind if he mentioned God. But when you mention God to steal $100 million a day, why does that not mean anything to the religious people? $100 million a day he's stealing, and he's a moral man. He's a good man doing God's will. God wants him to steal $100 million a day, and God wants a few, three, four, five soldiers a day to die in Iraq. And Bush is God's tool. Or they might avoid nominating candidates like John Kerry, a Catholic who claims that his faith affects everything I do in public life, except protecting innocent babies in the womb. Well, excuse me, the Supreme Court said that's a bunch of hogwash, and pardon us if we agree with the experts and the legal scholars. The fact is that liberal Democrats will do neither because they can't resist. They are who they are, and they are contemptuous of those religious morals voters who beat them on November 2nd, who they view as stupid. No, we view your stupidity as stupid. Nobody said your religion was stupid. The only way that ties in is if you vote some way because God told you to, then you're stupid. That's a fact. If Bush bombed Iraq because God told him to, how do you accept that as Bush doing God's will? Why is that not insanity to you? There's 100,000 dead civilians. Why can't people understand what 100,000 dead civilians means? what is there? There's probably 100,000 people in what? Muncie, Indiana? If Bush just set off a bomb and wiped out Muncie, would they say, that's okay, it's God's will? The liberals have a crass caricature born of willful ignorance, of not interacting with moderate to conservative Christians, of not visiting their websites and reading their publications, of never pausing to accurately inform themselves of those they ridicule. Well, if you guys made any sense, we would listen to you. The Democratic Party needs to think hard about why its candidate for the presidency was resoundingly defeated by church-going Protestants and Catholics. Conversely, Democrats must pause to contemplate why atheists are gung-ho for their presidential nominees. Until then, the Democratic Party will remain a very liberal political party that will increasingly attract the most secular and least religious among us. Well, Dr. Paul Kingor, I suggest one thing. Why don't you give us a number? Is America 5% atheist? Are they 49% atheist? It would be great to pin you down to a number. Who are these atheists that are running the Democratic Party? I don't see them. I think America is probably 10% atheist, and the other 90% make a claim when the guy asks them, when he's standing there getting ready to check off a box with a pencil in his hand, then they become religious. But on Sunday morning when the alarm rings, they roll over and wait for the game to come on. I think this is a giant hand job. I think they're trying to use religion. Once again, Bush and the GOP are using religion as a tool. You have to admit the religious people are easier to fool than the non-religious people because by their very nature, the definition of religion is believing in that which there is no proof. If you're going to play three-card Monty with a guy, you don't do it with an atheist. You don't do it with a street smart guy from New York. You want to find some rube from Alabama who's never been to New York before. That's the guy you want to try to take on three-card Monty. You want to get the guy who's fresh off the farm, who doesn't know the world. That's who you can fool more easily. And I believe that Bush has done that. And you got to factor Diebold in all this, because we have no clue at all if these... How can the exit polls be so wrong? The exit polls were wrong in 2000, they were wrong in 2002, and they were wrong in 2004. How is that possible? Why does a guy tell you the truth about why he voted for somebody, but then lie to you about who he voted for? That makes no sense. It holds no water. People come out and they say, I voted for Kerry, I voted for Kerry, I voted for Kerry. And they say, well, Bush won, so they all lied to us. But the reason they voted for Bush, you can look right here on the exit poll where I got the information. That's crazy. It makes no sense. I wish somebody would explain it to me, but still, after all these years, there's nobody who will get in the chat room with me. Why is that? And possibly their excuse is, oh, he's just going to scream at me and call me a monkey. Well, I've given my word several times up front and in print that I am very, very polite, almost boringly polite in the chat room because I want to keep the debate going as long as possible. As soon as it gets into you're screwed, no, you're screwed. No, you're fucked, no, you're fucked. Well, that's not a debate anymore. The only way you can have a debate is to keep things on the down low, keep things kind of calm. My idea of a cutting comment in a debate would say, I think that's a ridiculous statement. I'm not going to say, you dumb bastard, how dare you say that. I'm going to say, excuse me, I don't think you can back that last statement up. That's what happens in the debate room, but still, nobody will go in. It's the same reason they don't let people like Carville or Mike Malloy or Randy Rhodes, and I don't want to be on TV, but people like myself who can argue a little bit, they don't let us on the debate shows. It's Fox News. They go get Alan Combs because they know he's going to cave in on cue when he sees the commercial light blinking. He knows it's time for him to cave in so they can go to commercial and make some more money and make the people watch it. The people that watch Fox News, we've seen it in that Pippa report. The less you know, the more you're going to vote for Bush. When they ask, why did you vote for Bush? Because of all the good work he's done cleaning up the sky and the water. Why did you vote for Bush? Because of the great job he's done with the economy. Why did you vote for Bush? Because he got even with Saddam for 9/11. That's why they voted for Bush again and again. The stupid people vote for Bush. You can't, if there was a smart person that voted for Bush, he would be able to get into a chat room with me and defend himself. But he can't because those people don't exist. It would be so easy, but no, they're afraid. The facts are on our side. They know that, so they're wise enough to stay away.
And the loud profusion, you make me feel, you make me know. And the wrong direction, you make me feel, you make me shine.
Last weekend, we went to Little Rock. And it was kind of a sad occasion. It was a relative who had died. But when you die of old age, I've always felt it's just not that sad when you die of old age. I don't know her age. She was, I figured, late 70s. So we got this news probably on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and they told us the one part was Friday, and the funeral itself was Saturday. So we drove down there Friday. And first thing we figured we had to get was some reservations, because we don't like to stay with the relatives. You know, they're all Catholic, and there's like 9 or 12 of them in every family, and it's just, you know, you got to sleep on the floor with the cockroaches and such a bitch. When we were in Orlando, we stayed at a Spring Hill Suites. That was real nice. It was $100 because it was Orlando, but it's a lot cheaper everywhere else. In Arkansas, it's like $60. So we called the Spring Hill Suites in Little Rock and asked, I told them I needed to get a couple rooms. I was making the reservations for me, my brother, and my sister. So I called them. And, you know, I used to work at the car lot. And the capital number one rule in the car lot is when the guy says, I'll take the car, you shut the hell up. The second he says, I'll take it, you don't tell him how about the mileage. You don't start talking about the tires. You don't start talking about how good it sounds. You don't talk about, you'd love to take this guy. When the guy says, I'll take it, you say, sign here, give me the money, whatever it is to finish the transaction. Well, this fellow at the Spring Hill Suites who made my reservation, he doesn't know that rule, and that makes him a fool. Because once the business has transacted, you stop, because you can only lose the transaction. Once the guy says, I'll take it, you know, if you start talking about, oh, I could take this car to California, you think, the buyer might say, well, geez, I don't know. You know, I was thinking about it around the town car. I don't know if I would go. Maybe this isn't so, you know, that's why you never say a word after the guy says, I'll take it. So I call the Spring Hill people. I say, I need a room. And so we get all the business transacted. And then he says, have you stayed with us before? And, you know, you don't know how to answer that question. If you say yes, you get a spiel. If you say no, you get a spiel. So I tried to throw him off. I said, once before we stayed with you, but not at your hotel. And he said, well, you know, in our deluxe suites, you get a chair. And I'm like, okay, thanks. I'm ready to go. I got shit to do. I'm a busy man. I got me a website. I got a lot of things. Just not enough time. I mean, he says, you know, we also, in our suites, they also have a couch. And I'm going, cool, fine, you know. And I'm trying to get off the phone. He's going, and they also have a little coffee table. Okay. They got a coffee maker in the room. They got a, you know, continental breakfast. Oh, he says continental breakfast with sausage and eggs. And I'm thinking, whoa, usually for continental breakfast, you get cereal and a roll. Or a donut or something. He said, no, we got sausage today for cut. And then he starts going on, we have a swimming pool too, but it's closed. It's like, dude, why would you bother me? You're wasting my time explaining to me the amenities that you don't have. Now knock it off. He says, we got a gym. It's like, dude, I got to go. I'm a busy man. Goodbye. So I hang up on the guy. We head out to old Little Rock. And funny story, probably not that funny, but I hadn't been back to Little Rock in 30 years. It was very, very strange because I left there in 71 and hadn't been back. It'd been 33 years. I mean, I'd been through the town, but as far as going back and seeing it, and it was so strange because here I am after 33 years going back to see these people that I semi sort of grew up with. I mean, these were my peeps. These are my homies. People we used to run together and, well, we didn't commit crimes. Our back then, you know, our idea of a crime was sneaking a Coke out of the fridge and maybe some cookies or something. Anyway, so strange to go back after 33 years because when I left there was, you know, like these peeps, they weren't old enough to drive. And now I go back and they got kids who are old enough to drive. And that's real strange because, you know, you see someone and then it's like you blink an eye and then you go back there and it's been 33 years and everybody mostly looked the same. So we get into town Friday night. Went into my sister and her husband, so we all get together. We go over to the funeral parlor. Now, you know, funeral parlors, I don't quite understand. I mean, I guess there's some kind of closure thing, but, you know, I don't do the old closure thing. I'm strange in several respects, but that's one of them. The idea that let's go stand over the body and talk about how good he or she looks. And it's like, why are we lying to each other? You know, I don't like to lie to myself, and I don't like to lie to other people, but, you know, here's a person who have died of old age, and you know, they turn her over to the funeral parlor, and whoever's on duty at the funeral, it's like the 7-Eleven. Or, you know, you go out to, you ever been to a restaurant, and you get a really good steak, let's say, and so you tell your friends, man, you won't believe how good the steak is at this place. So you say, well, let's go back there Friday. So you go back Friday, and you get steak, it's okay, but it's not very good, and you ask a couple questions, turns out Bobby is off tonight. Bobby knows how to cook a steak, but he don't work Friday. So anyway, it's kind of like that at a funeral home. Whoever's on duty that day does up the poor woman who's passed away through old age. And so everybody stands there, oh, doesn't she look nice? Oh, yes, she really does. So to avoid all that, I don't go near the body. I don't have a big spooky thing about the body, but this, to me, it's pointless. You go to the funeral home not to see the body, you go to see the family, and they all want to drag you up there. So I told everybody, already been. We're standing in this little church chapel kind of thing, and one by one, here come the relatives that I hadn't seen in 34 years, and that's real spooky. Hey, look at you. Remember me? Hey, dude, what it is? Remember how we used to be tired? We used to sleep in the same bed together, like for the summer. Remember me? We got there maybe 6 o'clock or so, because we'd been on the road all day. And they told us at 7 o'clock they're having the rosary. And I don't know if you know what a rosary is, but rosary is like 50 or 60 small prayers put together. You do a welcome to the rosary prayer, and then you do 3... probably Hail Marys, or Our Fathers, you do something, and then you come to the fork in the road on the rosary, and you got to pick which way you're going to go, but it doesn't matter because they're all the same. And then you do like 10 of these prayers, and then you do one of these prayers, and then you do 10 of these prayers, one of those prayers, and 10 of these, and it just takes all day. And again, I'm a busy man, and why would I want to involve myself in some hedonistic voodoo ritual religious wackoism that's been passed down through the centuries? Is there anything more pointless than praying? And praying an organized rosary, if you watch a professional baseball game, many of the players are Puerto Rican or Costa Rican or something. And so when they play the national anthem, they don't, you know, kind of, they don't sing, they don't play along, they don't pledge. They might take off their hat, kind of show respect. I don't want to draw attention to themselves, but I felt kind of like that. Everybody was pledging allegiance to the religion here, and I'm not in alliance much, so I didn't want to go through the ritual. I didn't want to fake the ritual of the rosary with these people. So when it came near 7 o'clock, me and Mrs. Bart and those who wanted to go, we kind of snuck out. We heard what happened when we were gone, which is kind of strange. Apparently this is only in Arkansas. This little funeral parlor deal, it had sections in it. Anyway, what happened when it came time, I guess, for the rosary, the immediate family, I mean, everybody there is either family or friends or coworkers, whatever, but the immediate family went off into a separate room. And apparently that's an Arkansas thing. I asked around and no one ever heard of it before, but someone said, yeah, I remember I had an uncle in Arkansas years ago and the whole family did that. But for some reason in Arkansas, the immediate family segregates into a separate room for the pseudo ceremony here. So anyway, that was Friday. That was a little spooky. So we went back to the, hotel, had what they called some damn good pizza, D-A-M-G-O-O-D-E, pizza.com, damngoodpizza.com. And you go to the website, and it says the reason our pizza is damn good is because we use damn good crust, we use damn good sauce, we use damn good ingredients. So we ordered a damn good pizza. It was damn good. How about that? Okay, so Saturday, wake up, day of the funeral, not a happy occasion, but like I say, person dies of old age, hey. The funeral is at the fabulous St. Edward's Church in downtown Little Rock. But you wouldn't believe this church. Somewhere, think in the 60s, the church burned. And so what they did, they called Germany, and they ordered a brand new altar built from this wood that they ordered from the Black Forest of Germany. They ordered this, and damn, I meant to get a picture, but I couldn't. Didn't want to walk in after 30 years with a camera to take a picture of the church. How weird is Cousin Bart? But it had all these intricate, oh, you just wouldn't believe this altar. It's just really, really very Catholic, very ornate, you look at it, you go, damn, look at that. Anyway, and of course, my brother the priest, he's co-officiating. Imagine it was kind of a strange deal when the local priest, they tell him, hey, you got a funeral Saturday, and we got some rube coming in from St. Louis. He wants to co-headline the show, and it's like, okay. But anyway, they seem to get along right. After the funeral, it was a very nice funeral. Lots of singing. I hadn't been in a church in a long time. You know, that's strange about them Catholics. It's please rise, please kneel, please sit down, please rise, please kneel, please sit down, please rise, please kneel. It's like, hey, I'm getting to work out here. After all, I got the thing, and that whole stand-up, sit-down thing was to keep you awake because you're in church, you know. So we're out of there, go to the cemetery. So after the ceremony, we're all going over to my cousin Elizabeth's house. Elizabeth is a nun. And she lives in a house with another nun, and she doesn't dress like a nun, but it seems like her roommate did. I think it's probably optional, but anyway, whoever thought nuns could live in a house? You know, at my age, I'm so old, I remember when they lived in a convent, but I imagine the church with their declining monetary base. They're finding other ways. They just can't upkeep a comet, so they, I assume, have these women get jobs and none when they can. So we went over there. Oh, it was packed house, too. There's, you know, 60, 70 people there, and even if you got a decent-sized house, 60, 70 people, lots of people. Lots more stories. Met up with a bunch of people. Since I've been there in 33 years, had to meet everybody. Had to meet, you know, because since I left, everybody had kids. Oh, the Catholic, everybody had 8 or 10 kids, and it's hard to keep up with 8 or 10. I had trouble remembering my cousins' names, but all the cousins' kids, gee, that turned out to be an ordeal. We stayed at the party a couple hours. After a while, you know, I started getting the heebie-jeebies. It's hard for me to be anywhere. Remember I told you a long, long time ago, if Clinton had invited me to the White House, I don't know if I could have made it, because I just don't know if I could sit there in them fancy clothes with the, you know, at the fancy table with the fancy everything and just, oh, it's just kind of closing in on me. I got this claustrophobia deal a little bit there. After a while, we had to get away. So, went back to the hotel. While we're at the hotel, Mrs. Bart's looking through the little brochure and they tell us this little restaurant not far away, about a mile away, has the best white cheese dip in the world. Mrs. Bart loves the cheese dip. So she says, she looks at me and says, you're taking me to this restaurant. Like, okay, it's the Loca Luna, or it might have been the Luna Loca, one of the two, but it's lunaloca.com or localuna.com if you want to look up a restaurant in Little Rock. And it was right in the area, so we took the big, big hill, went over the big, big hill to the restaurant. They don't open for 2 hours. It's 3:30, they open at 5:30. Great. So we got 2 hours to kill, so we thought we'd drive around the town and see what's new. Anyway, drove down to the Clinton Library. And took a couple of pictures. I should put them on the website. Tell you what, we'll call it, go to barcup.com/clintonlibrary.htm. How about that? Yeah, that's where we'll put the pictures. And at first I thought it looked like a big trailer. Don't you hate that? You know, all the trouble Clinton's had, and now here the library looks like a trailer. But then they explained, no, it's a bridge. It was a bridge shooting out over the river. It's like a bridge that had not yet been completed. So, you know, we have to forgive them for that, because a bridge is going to be boxy by its nature, because it's, what, are you going to have a bridge that looks like spaghetti? No, it's going to look like a box because it's supposed to be carrying cars and stuff. Okay, so we did that. Went back to the place, had a little cheese dip. It was very good. I can't say it was the best cheese dip in the world, but it was very good. Mrs. Bart loves her cheese dip. Oh, and they brought us the red and the blue and the corn-colored little Doritos. Those were good, too. And they had a tequila list. So I said, fine, hey, garçon, bring me a Don Eduardo Añejo. No lime, no salt. And he says, oh, okay. He looks at me like, hey, for Rube, how'd you know the name of that tequila? So they brought me that shot, and it was Mosfina. For a few seconds there, I thought, oh, this tastes as good as Chinaco. And it tasted so good. Oh, and it lasted the whole meal, just a little sip here, a little sip there, a little cheese dip. It was really fine. All we had was a cheese dip, because we had further obligations. Anyway, we leave there, and we're supposed to meet everybody for dinner at the Cajun Wharf downtown. Well, it's not downtown either. It's on the river because it's a wharf. Get it? Went to the Cajun Wharf, and there's probably 25 of us, maybe 30. And I got to thinking, last time about 25 or 30 of us ate together, Isaac Peterson, my good friend, got the big F put on him because we were at the Hard Rock, the Pink Taco at the Hard Rock in Vegas at Bartfest West. And 25 of us or whatever sitting there eating and drinking. And everybody paid their bill, and as we get out to leave, Isaac was the last guy out the door, and I said, excuse me, sir, there's another $200 on this bill, and Isaac's going, huh? So instead of making a big fuss like I would have, he gave him the $200, and then he mentioned it later, so we kind of took care of him later, but I got to thinking. My sister and my cousin, they worked out, let's all go to Cajun Wharf, and I got to thinking, ooh, someone's got 30 people times, and it was steak and stuff, so figure that's maybe $30 a person. This could be $900 bill that somebody's going to get stuck with. And, you know, I hate to be the guy with the credit card when the $900 meal comes ready to pay for. But they worked it out to where the waiter split us up. You're going to pay for you two. You're going to pay for you two. Oh, that's a good idea. Because, oh, when there's $900, you just hate to be the guy with the credit card. At the Cajun Wharf. Oh, and everybody ate seafood and stuff. Hell, I got me a steak. I don't eat that wacky seafood. But there was oysters. There was calamari, there was squid, there was all kinds of weird things. And these are Arkies eating this stuff. Go figure. Oh, what fun we had at the Cajun Wharf. Then they had, oh, my sisters and that. See, like I say, I can only do so much of this congregating, you know. I can only be with the people for a certain amount of time. So after we get done with the Cajun Wharf, Turns out two of them had birthdays the day of the funeral. So my sister says, I know, let's go buy a couple of cakes and go back to the hotel, all of us, and start another party. It's like 8 or 9 o'clock now. We've been up and with these people like 13 hours. My sister wants to start another party. So I told them we would not be able to make that party. So anyway, they brought the whole gang back to the hotel. We snuck out early, drove fast as we could, got hidden in our room real well before this third or fourth party, whatever it is, broke out. And they had a good time telling old stories down the lobby while we successfully hid in our room. So that's why you didn't get a radio show last week. Sorry about that. When the occasional out-of-town emergency venture comes up, we have no choice but to take the emergency venture out of town.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
President Bush nominated Condoleezza Rice as his new Secretary of State this week, saying that she would be America's face to the world, while Cheney will remain the finger. When asked why he chose Rice to replace Colin Powell, the president responded, well, once you go black. Hooray! Advertisers launched a campaign this week to amend the Constitution so that foreign-born citizens can run for president. Here to defend the ads, the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Hello, Tina, Amy. Trust me when I say there's nothing I love more than the Constitution of the United States of America. What with the we the peoples and the more perfect unions and the domestic tranquilities and all of these things. But the Constitution as it is written now says I can't be president because I was born in Austria. This may have made sense in the days of the kings and the ships and the girly men with the wigs and the wooden teeth up there.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a little bit reckless to change the Constitution?
Tina, so what that I'm Austrian? I mean, Tom Arnold was born in America. Do you want him to be a president? No, my friends, the time has come for change. The Constitution has changed many times. You know, what with the endings of the slaveries and the telling the ladies they could vote and the not being able to drinkings and things of that nature. I mean, if the Constitution hadn't changed, then the Condoleezza Rices and the Colin Powells wouldn't be allowed to do the votings and the drinking out there. Listen to me. The change has been important in America. You know, what with the ridings and the front of the buses and the havings of the dreams and all of these things. And now it's time for change again so we can allow the natural progression of freedoms from the blacks to the women's to the gays to the Austrians out there. I know what a lot of you are thinking. This man's from the future. He means us harm out there.
Yes, actually, that is what I was thinking.
Trust me, Tina, when I say to you, that was just a role I played in a movie. And furthermore, that was not even a man from the future. That was a robot from the future. So you can throw that whole argument into the garbage. But one thing I will never throw into the garbage is the Constitution. Because I'm the Constitutionator.
He's the President Arnold Schwarzenegger, everyone. Pfizer has agreed to pull its Wild Thing Viagra television ads Monday after the FDA complained that they made the impotence drug sound like a recreational sex aid and not the preferred form of grandma abuse that it is. Pfizer has also decided to drop the idea of changing the name of the drug to boing. During his acceptance speech at the American Music Awards, Outkast Big Boy paid tribute to former Wu-Tang Clan member Old Dirty Bastard. And that's this week's story that won't make sense to my mom. Yay, Amazon.
I'd like to interrupt and tell you a little story here. I know you think of me as a 21st century kind of guy, maybe with my great ideas and my super analogies, maybe even a 22nd century kind of guy. But I just this last week have gotten into the TiVo. I got my first TiVo. Oh, and that's a story. I should tell you about the cable guy coming by. Jesus, where do they get these people? But anyway, I have TiVo for the first time, and I can't believe how good it is. It is so much different from having a VCR. You know, I've got these VCRs. I got, I guess, four VCRs, and I got thousands of VCR tapes, and I can't find anything. But on the TiVo, it's all right there on your TV screen. Anytime we want to see something, we just hit the little list button, and bam, all these shows pop up, and you click one, and it comes out in digital form. Hey, you just can't beat that. That is revolutionizing TV watching the old bark cut manner. Another thing it does, and I'm not sure how they do it, because there may be magic involved. Say you're doing something in the other room, and you come in, and you see someone on TV that's real good. You think, damn, I should be taping that. You already are. I don't understand how they do this, but it's automatically taping all the time. It tapes like the last hour. So if you walk in and it's 4:30 and there's a show started at 4:00, you can hit the record button and the recording will have started at 4:00. Now, isn't that crazy? So yeah, if you miss something, you can kind of go back in time a little bit. Another thing it lets me do, and I know this is probably really old news to all of you, but hey, it's brand new to me. Also, if someone says something and you miss it, you don't quite understand what you just hit the reverse button. They got a little go back 10 seconds button. So if someone says something you didn't quite hear, you just press that button, it goes back 10 seconds and it replays it, and you can go on and watch the rest of it as is. And I think that's pretty cool. But here's the reason I brought that up. You just heard a little joke about Old Dirty Bastard. The TiVo erased that. Now, that's confusing to me. Have they programmed into TiVo that it won't record dirty words? If I had to make a choice, I would say somehow there was just a glitch. But what she said, when she told that little story, I mean, I watched it live, and then later I played it for Mrs. Bart. And when it got to Old Dirty Bastard, it cut that out. And it makes me wonder, does TiVo cut out bad words? Surely not. I mean, how are you going to watch Pulp Fiction? How are you going to watch Jay and Silent Bob if it cuts out the bad words? So it must have just been a glitch, but I thought it was odd that it cut out just Old Dirty Bastard. But yes, I have TiVo now, and oh, it's just kind of amazing. There doesn't seem to be a defrag button on the TiVo. It's a hard drive. Matter of fact, there's two hard drives that can record two things at the same time, which is kind of amazing because there's always two things on. You're going to watch and record one, and you want to see the one you recorded at a later date, the other one, and that works out real good because, two things on the same time. When the first show's done, you just hit list, and a list pops up, and you press that one, and boom, you get to watch the second one, and it's digital. It looks just like a real TV. How about that? But yes, 22nd Century Bark Cop with his TiVo. Oh, I'm dangerous now.
William Sapphire, the conservative voice of the New York Times, announced that he will stop writing his op-ed column in January. Upon hearing the news, fellow columnist Maureen Dowd said, "That's really interesting." It was revealed this week that David Lee Roth has been training in New York to become an EMT. It's not going well. Lee Roth, you're jumping out of the back of the ambulance. Amtrak conductors have begun random checks of passengers' identities as a precaution against terrorist attacks. Great news, because Amtrak is still my favorite way to travel. Amtrak, America's way to travel with weed.
So Friday, I go to my P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 54466, Tulsa, OK 74155. Lo and behold, there was something in my P.O. Box. You know, I send out more mail than I get, and you'd think a person in my position would get more mail that he sends out, but most every day, I'm up there mailing out some shows to somebody, some of the old good old Bark Cup Radio, like what you're hearing right now, mailing that out to somebody, and once I drop the mail in the mailbox, I go and check my P.O. Box, and often there's nothing there, but this time, there was something in there. Oh, I got so excited, too. When I look in there, I saw a little key. When the little key's in there, it means you've got something waiting for you that's bigger than the P.O. box. I thought, ooh, 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 someone sent me something, and I'll be damned if they weren't right. So I go to the little box, open it up. I'm sorry, take the key, go look in the big box, and there's a big box in there. So I took it home and opened it up, and it was from Minnesota. It was from a pillar who doesn't want his name used, but Harmonic is one of his names. So I opened it up, and there was a twofer. It was a double dipper. There was a check donation in there, and it was very nice, thank you. But there was also something else in the box. So I opened up the box. It was inside the box, and I'll be darned. It was a bottle of Tequila Casadores Reposado, 100% de agave. Now, I've tried many, many kinds of tequila, as you know. Ooh, it's Tequila Casadores de Arendas del... Oh, I can't read that. I'm too old. D-E-S-D-E-R-I-D-E-C-V. Must be another language. But anyway, he sent me a bottle of Tequila Casadores Reposado and said, Bart, it's some pretty good stuff. You might give it a try. You might not think it's as good as Chinaco, but it might end up being your number two. So I'm going to try it live right here on the radio, live as we speak. 100% de agave reposado. It's a tall, kind of a mostly normal looking bottle. Got a little Aunt Jemima going on at the top, but it's got a contraption on the top I've never seen. The cap to the bottle has got a little arm on it, so I'm going to have to work with the arm. But here we are live, right here on the radio. We're going to open this up live. Been to Vegas. At the Hard Rock in Vegas, they have 100 kinds of tequila, and I've had this. I've seen it before, but I just never have tried it. Seems like I tried to try it one time, and something happened like I ordered one, and they were out, or I ordered one and left where they brought it, something like that. But anyway, so here we are going to try it. Nothing broke. Okay, there was it. Now we're opening. Opening the top. Giving it a big whiff there. Smells like tequila. Now I'm pouring it in my Chinaco, what's that called? Snifter that I got from Tommy's in San Francisco. Tommy's Tequila Bar. Gonna have to go back there sometime. Oh, look, it's got a funny spout on it. Uh-oh. Here it comes. All right, here we go. My first taste of Casadores Reposado. Wow, very nice. Very smooth. Little biter on the outside, which is what you want. But it is a Reposado. As you know, the Añejo has a little more. Reposado is Spanish for rested, which means they set it aside. They allowed it to thicken, to cool, to coagulate. And the Añejo is thrown in these old oak barrels with odd flavorings, pears and apples and such. So it doesn't have the pear and apple flavor, but ooh, that is very nice. Let me try another one. Very nice. I'm surprised. Most Reposados aren't this good, but Mr. Harmonic was correct. This is very, very fine stuff. I wonder if Casadores makes an Añejo. That would be interesting. So I'm going to do the rest of this shot. That is very nice. Ooh, I might have to do some of that to start the show. But thank you to Mr. Harmonic. That was very nice. Thank you for the gift. Thank you for the check. Boy, it's great to have pillars like that. Mr. Harmonic in Minnesota, you is the man.